Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and the one and only Tandria Bellamy here with you on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's live stream. Tandria, how you doing today?
I'm great, Scott, and so glad to be buzzing with you again.
Yes, we got to do this in person next time, but it's great to have you back. I know you've been busy. I was getting an update from you in the green room. We may touch on that later today. But folks, you know, on today's show, to Tandria's comments, it's The Buzz, where every Monday at 12 noon Eastern time, we discuss a variety of news and developments across global supply chain, across global business, really. News that matters is what we like to call it. The Buzz, folks, is powered by our friends at Easy Post, who help make shipping easy. Oh, we could all use easy shipping, flexible shipping, scalable shipping. You can learn more about how you can simplify your shipping operations and delight your customers at easypost.com. Okay, Tandria, it is the first Monday in February. It's hard to believe. Super Bowl is right around the corner. Yesterday, of course, and you were telling me about a special event in Atlanta. We kicked off Black History Month 2026 here in the U.S., where there's a lot to reflect on and then celebrate for sure. Tandria, really quick, you went to a special event yesterday in the Roswell area. What was that?
Yes, Roswell Roots has been this is now its 25th year, and there are just various activities that go on throughout the month. Last night was a music production that was history to hip hop, and it just traced the history of Black music from Negro spirituals and the slave fields up to present day. And it was very well done.
I love it. And you gave me a tip. You're a big gospel music listener, amongst other things. And Jonathan McReynolds was the singer you put on my radar. Is that right?
Yes, right. Great lyricist. I mean, his lyrics just really, really touched your heart.
Folks, check it out. Let us know what you think. But hey, from a business perspective here today, we got a big show teed up. Trade deficit news that Tandria will say, and maybe DC will as well. It might be clickbaitish. We'll see. A warehouse market update. We're going to take a look at a few predicted shortages and cost increases in 2026. We'll even talk about the big problem that the reverse logistics and returns management space has. And that if they've got a big problem, it means we all have a big problem. All that and much, much more. And in about 12 minutes or so, we're bringing in a great guest, a longtime friend of the show, DC Sfregola with New Gen Architects. You're going to enjoy her perspective here today. So big show. Tandria, did you take your vitamins or ready to go? Eat your Wheaties this morning?
Let's go, Scott. Let's go.
Folks, buckle up for a big edition of The Buzz powered by Easy Post right here today. All right. So before we bring on DC, I want to cover three quick things, starting with our latest edition of With That Said, published right here over the weekend. Now, in this edition, we've got a variety, as always, news, notes, resources, including some of our upcoming live events. Touched on a couple things here. This is a picture, Tandria, of a bunch of University of Georgia students, talented students, learning about how they do operations at a big golf tournament that's hosted in Augusta. You may know the one I'm talking about. So that was really good. We shared the news on a social network platform that's been created solely for AI agents. Tandria, like my rhetorical question there says, what could possibly go wrong? Huh? And then we also touched on the American Logistics Aid Network. Our friends over there do great work, wonderful nonprofit, action-oriented nonprofit. We're including some of their priority needs each week in our newsletter. And folks, if you can contribute to those needs we publish each week, come back and reach out to us. We want to celebrate that, amplify your good deeds. And then finally, Tandria, you know, you were with us last year, April 29th, National Supply Chain Day. It's that time again. Plan to join us at 12 noon Eastern time for a virtual event that will feature a wide range of supply chain leaders, including my colleague, the fearless president here at Supply Chain Now, Mary Kate Love. So folks, all that is in the most recent edition of With That Said. Now, Tandria, did you get a chance? I know you had a busy weekend. Did you get a chance to check out With That Said?
I did. But instead of going into any of the articles, we really, really have to hype and get the word out on National Supply Chain Day. This country doesn't run. No country runs without the supply chain and the good people who are involved with it. It is something that really, really should get more recognition and just more thought put into it. There's so much that goes on under the umbrella of supply chain. And making that day just more prominent is something that all of our supply chain professionals should help us do.
Well said, especially the people, as we both know and love and appreciate all the people that make global supply chain happen and give us all these modern conveniences. I mean, we're spoiled to death in many ways. All right. So Tandria, Trisha is Johnny on the spot here today. She's dropped a link to With That Said, and she's also dropped a link to National Supply Chain Day. Check it out. And we'd love for y'all to join us. Let's see here. Now, you also shared, Tandria, a really interesting note on LinkedIn a week or two ago. Check this out, folks. If you're watching us here today, seven sins of CEOs. I'm going to hit these really quick because Tandria added an eighth one. Seven sins here. And this comes from Eric Partikers. I think I said that right. Founder and CEO Accelerator. Number one, micromanaging your team. Number two, lack of transparency. Number three, avoiding tough decisions. Number four, neglecting toxic culture. Number five, resisting change. Number six, taking on too much. Number seven, not investing in your people. So Tandria, you added an eighth one though. Tell us about that one.
Not listening to your team. You assembled a team, generally, of talented people. Most of the time, you've chosen these people. You've got to give them a voice. One of the best managers, leaders that I ever had, we were in a meeting, and he said, if there's six of us in this meeting, and we all agree, I don't need five of you. You need diversity of thought. You need input from other people. That's the only way that you can possibly have the highest performing, most motivated team is to allow and actually listen to the input from the team members.
Yes. Well said, Tandria. And I got to tell you, our team members are a lot smarter than me. So if I don't listen to them, to what they do, we're really in trouble. But kidding aside, we probably all have worked with or for folks that just don't listen, right? Mm-hmm. And they find out the hard way a lot of times. But a great list, Tandria. And thanks so much for sharing that with your social network and with us here today. Speaking of thanks, hey, this is Andrew. Andrew's back with us. Great to see you here today. I know you've had some big news with your business. Robert is back with us. Hey, Robert, great to see you. Remind me what part of the world you're in. I promise it'll stick after you share with me one more time, maybe. Tandria, there's one more thing I want to share before we bring on DC's Fragola, and that is, folks, Manifest is back next week. It keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I'm looking forward to see everyone out in Vegas. I'll be interviewing. I've got a panel session and connecting hopefully with a bunch of folks. And perhaps if you're headed to Manifest this year, you may be feeling some of the pressure out in the market. A lot more automation solutions. Which one do we get? More releases, more integrations, but less room for failure. But you know the teams moving fastest are not testing more. They're testing smarter. All this is why our friends at Cycle Labs will be at Manifest 2026, which runs, again, from February 9th through the 11th in Vegas. It's just around the corner. Now, Cycle Labs will be at booth 1095, meeting with supply chain ERP and WMS teams who all need to validate change without slowing the business down. We got no time for that. And folks, when the show floor gets too loud for you, we can probably all relate to that. The good news is that Cycle Labs is creating a space for nice, easy, and real conversations. Get this, Tandria. Drinks and darts. That's a dangerous combination. With Rebus definitely. And Blue Yonder. And tequila tasting. That can be dangerous too. With, I think it's SlimCon. No demos, folks. Just real conversations with peers that are facing the same testing challenges. You can plan ahead by visiting the link in the comments to schedule time to meet with our friends at Cycle Labs. Tandria, are you a tequila fan?
Yes, Scott.
Yes? Do you have a certain type that is your go-to for special occasions? Or are you just kind of a generic?
I'm still a novice. So I'm in the experimental phase.
Okay.
And different ones depending on if it's going to be for sipping or mixing in a margarita.
Okay. I do mainly the latter. And my margaritas, they got to be on the rocks with no salt.
No salt, definitely.
It gives more heartburn. I'm not a big fan of that. I hadn't even really learned the different highfalutin styles of tequila. So maybe I'll have to go check out this event there at Manifest. And folks, if you want to do that, any of those events, or stop by the booth, you can check out the link right there. And Robert, yes, I should have known. You're from South Africa. Great to see you again. You've shared that before. And great to have you back here on The Buzz, powered by our friends at EasyPost. Okay, Tandria, I'm delighted to have a great guest and longtime friend of the show here on The Buzz today. DC's Fragola has spent years helping manufacturers, builders, and public sector leaders stand up resilient operating systems so plans connect execution and project finish on time, on budget, and with less waste. We could all use more of that, huh? She is also an advisor, a trainer, and the author, where's my copy, of a new book that came out last year, Next Level Construction Management, Leveraging Digital Supply Chain Fundamentals for Project Success. Please join me in welcoming DC's Fragola, founder and CEO of New Gen Architects. Hey, DC, how you doing?
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm doing well. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Great to see you. Tanger, as we were talking pre-show, DC just got back from a big trip where you were in Kenya, I think, and a really quick there and back. Is that right?
Yes. 20 hours there. Was there for 40 hours, 20 hours back.
Wow. You're in demand, and folks everywhere, supply chain leaders everywhere, need guidance and best practices. But we're going to talk more about your book in a second and some other things. DC and Tandria, this is where I want to start. Fun warm-up question. So today's Groundhog Day. No word yet on what happened to Groundhog. We'll see. It is California Kiwi Fruit Day. It's Crepe Day. It's National Tater Tot Day. Give me McDonald's French fries. I don't need tater tots. And it's National Heavenly Hash Day. Now, to me, that is ice cream, right? Chocolate, marshmallows, almonds, and other good stuff in it. So to that end, here on National Heavenly Hash Day, DC, what is one of your favorite ice creams out there and where do you go get it?
It is called Amarena.
Okay.
It's like it's a Spanish cherry that it's mixed with fior di latte, which is like Italian version of vanilla. It's a little bit different. And my favorite spot to get it used to be a cute little gelateria ice cream shop, Puerto Romana, Milano in Milan. And they closed. I think just couldn't, you know, make it during COVID. So now I get it around the corner from my mother-in-law's house.
Okay.
And I've tried to make it at home with like, how do you say it? Maraschino cherry. If you put a stone bowl in the freezer and then try to mix it up. It's not the same, but I try.
DC.
It gets my fix.
Man, that is the most highfalutin ice cream I've heard in a long time. And it sounds so, my stomach is now growling. Tandria, that's going to be tough to beat. What is your go-to ice cream?
I'm a chocolate almond ice cream fan, and it's not in a lot of places. Baskin Robbins used to carry it, but only in the fall. So I would have to do a Cold Stone type of concoction in order to get it. So Maggie Moo's, their dark chocolate with almonds in it, or Cold Stone Creamery, their chocolate ice cream with almonds in it. But give me chocolate ice cream with nuts and I'm happy.
Okay. That sounds pretty good too. I love plain almonds, raw almonds. I eat those all the time. A good snack, healthy snack. Unfortunately, I also snack on Oreo ice cream quite a bit. The real stuff. DC and Tandria. I don't like generic cookies and cream, right? It's got to be the real deal Oreo. And I tell you, Oreo came out with its own like official ice cream. That stuff is so good, DC and Tandria. All right. Well, now that we are absolutely starving, and I'm going to have to get some ice cream tonight. It's great to have you with us, DC. It's been too long. And Tandria, it's great to have you back here on The Buzz. Let's get to work and dive into some news stories here on The Buzz powered by Easy Post. And we're going to start with what Tandria shared in the pre-show. Might be a little bit of clickbait. So I'm going to unpack this news story right quick. And then we're going to get DC and Tandria to weigh in. So CNBC reported on new U.S. trade data last week. The U.S. trade deficit, which is the difference between our imports and exports, almost doubled in November, according to Census Bureau data. October 2025, the month prior, was the lowest level that our trade deficit had been at in the U.S. since 2009, but November was a good bit of a different story as the tariff turmoil has really started to, we feel it a lot more, I think. We'll see where the months ahead lead us. Not only did it almost double from October to November, but the trade deficit was 4% higher than November 2024, so year over year. About one-third of the gain was caused by trade changes with the European Union, where U.S. exports dropped by over $11 billion from October to November. All right, so DC, I wish we could start with good news. Oh, we started with ice cream, so that's good news. But your thoughts on what we're seeing here, DC?
Well, you know, it's interesting to me how little we understand about trade if you're not really in trade. And it made me, reading this article made me think about a conference I went to in 2024 where a political scientist presented some findings about voter behavior and just the topics that voters really care about. And global trade was the last thing. And I thought that's so wild because it impacts us so much as consumers. And then when I started reading this article, I was like, wait, I didn't realize the budget was that much at a deficit. And then I read it more. I was like, no, I remember the trade deficit and the federal budget deficit are not the same. And then I also, as you start to read, you start to really look at, you know, what is driving that deficit. And, you know, then I started to think, but doesn't this like 1 month doesn't like that? That's not what we really look at to say, oh, this is what I'm going to use as a data point to make decisions. You know, you really want to look at a 3-month average to see what the trends are, what's causing that trade deficit. And it's really more of an indicator of like where we're investing, you know, what we're bringing in for imports. And, you know, it's a macro mirror of like the demand and investment within the U.S. But I'm interested to know, I didn't catch the clickbait part of it. So I'm interested to hear Tandria's perspective on the clickbait piece of it.
Same. Tandria, your thoughts here.
It's the 94%. Saying that it almost doubled. And again, like DC said, you can't use 1 month as a data point to make any type of decision on. So the deficit was 56.8 billion in November, 29.4 the previous month. That was a 16-year low, as you said. But the 3 months prior to that were 48.1, 55.6, and 74.4. So that 56.8 is really not an anomaly. The 29.4 is. And the concentration should be on, you know, how'd you drop so much in 1 month and why? And were there artificial things that really pushed that number down? And as you look at what the average is and how the trends have been going, the 56.8 that was highlighted as this 94% increase really wasn't out of alignment with what had been happening all of the previous months of the year.
Well said. Well said. And, you know, we'll see. I'm really curious to see what December and January. It'll be a little while, but that 3 month average, that's a great point, DC and Tandria. And I tell you, I don't know about y'all, but the headaches and the uncertainty and the heartburn and more from the ever changing trade policies, that's no good. No bueno. All right, really quick. Hey, Jeremy, maybe gaming metrics, maybe. Jeremy, great to see you. And he says, happy Candlemas. That's right. I think today is Candlemas. Great to see you. And also, Haley from Cape Town, South Africa. Great to see you here today. Love to get any of y'all's thoughts on trade or any of the topics we talk about here today. One more last note, because this ice cream is lingering. Amanda says, I got Ninja Creamy last year for Christmas. We love making tart frozen yogurt or homemade coffee ice cream. Also love Cherry Garcia if I'm grabbing it from the store. All that Cherry Garcia is to die for. All right, so we're going to shift over to the warehousing sector, DC and Tandria. The Wall Street Journal was reporting that the world's largest owner of industrial real estate says demand for warehouse space is increasing after a long period of sluggishness. Prologis shared that warehouse rental demand started out pretty soft in the first part of 2025, but improved, especially in the second half of the year. As it says, some corporations were refocusing on longer-term supply chain needs. Prologis leased 228 million square feet of warehouse space globally last year, its biggest year since 2021. Here in the U.S., Cushman & Wakefield said that the average warehouse vacancy rate was at an 11-year high of 7.1% in the fourth quarter of 2025. The firm also reports that companies leased about 665 million square feet of warehouse space in the U.S. in 2025. That's the highest total since 2022. Warehouse rents were still depressed in 2025, down 3.7% globally and 4.5% across the U.S. Get this, new warehouse completions globally are expected to bring 474 million square feet of warehouse space online in 2026. Sounds like a lot, but that would be the smallest amount of new space coming online since 2018. One final note, Tandria and DC. There's a quote here in this article from Prologis CEO Daniel Letter. And I really wish I felt this quote in more conversations I'm having, but this is what he said. Quote, customers are making long-term decisions with greater conviction, end quote. Okay. Practical optimism, perhaps. DC, your thoughts on what we're seeing in warehousing?
It is whiplash as a supply chain planner. You know, we were up, we didn't have any space. Now, you know, then it was a surplus. Now we're rebounding. And it's interesting. I was just talking a couple of weeks ago with a planning team. And, you know, we were talking about how we need to bring warehouse utilization metrics into our planning to really look at everything from a holistic perspective. And it's so interesting that we touch on this, you know, kind of warehouse market recovery topic after the deficit, you know, conversation, because a deficit doesn't necessarily mean our economy is losing, you know, within the U.S. It could reflect strong domestic demand, which if you look at what we're saying now with, you know, warehousing space rebounding, that could very well be the case, which is why as supply chain planners, as demand planners, as, you know, you're doing your network design and you're doing your strategic procurement, it's so important to look at so many different data points. And again, it's kind of like whiplash. It's hard to keep up with it. Especially, you know, my focus as a strategist, a lot of times is the longer term plan. If you need to increase warehouse space, if you need to increase manufacturing and production capacity, you need to find a new supplier. You don't do that overnight. Mm. You can't say, oh, I need to do this next week. I need to do this tomorrow. So you have to look at these 3, 4, 5 year plans. And an infrastructure and, you know, construction, that could also look like 10 to 15 year plans. Mm. So like, what are we even doing? You know, I don't know, trying to keep up. But you know, when I read trade deficit and then I read, you know, warehouse market recovery, I'm like, wait, what do I do? Right. And it's just really, you know, you really have to look at from a holistic perspective, look at every data point. And you know, it's really important to also, we talk about so much technology. This is really where the decision comes from a human.
Yes.
And you have to really understand all the different levers, your trade-offs, your scenario planning, and then make decisions from that way. But yeah, it's great to see those contrasting, you know, headlines.
It is. And as both you and Tandria both have mentioned a couple times here, we got to get past the headlines, right? Got to get to the real story. Tandria, I'm really curious, as someone that most of our audience members may know, you had an incredible career with UPS. And as I like to say, we're still auditing, but you've been in and out of millions of warehouses during your career. Your thoughts on the story here?
I think some of it just has to go to what we've been talking about most of the morning, a level of uncertainty. Mm. Uncertainty with supplies, uncertainty with tariffs, uncertainty will lead you to have, you know, larger inventory levels, tend not to be as much on the just-in-time when there's a large level of uncertainty. Also, as you build up inventory levels, you're probably going to see some places where they start to reduce the number of SKUs so they're not left with overstocks. But I think the uncertainty that we've talked about will definitely lead to people building up inventories, which will require more warehouse space.
And also, I'd say just for the audience, you know, we're talking to supply chain practitioners, we're talking to supply chain leaders. And I say very often with, you know, my clients and different teams, inventory alone is not a strategy. Anything, you know, you're looking to increase warehouse space, to bring in more inventory and use it as a buffer, but anything can happen to that inventory. Right. One container falls off the ship, you know, you get a bad quality batch of inventory, and that strategy, that buffer is out the window.
Yeah.
You can't only look at inventory as a strategy, especially in, you know, in industries where shelf life is an issue. You know, so you bring it in, and then if you don't use it, well, now you're also writing off. And, you know, just from a sustainability, you know, holistic perspective, you're producing product that is essentially going to go to waste. Mm. So it's so much to look at and to, you know, really think about. But that's where I was talking about, you know, the trade-offs. And as warehouse space is less available, inventory holding costs are going to increase.
Yes.
So you're now also looking at, you know, your total landed cost increasing. So it's a lot of different things that you have to manage as a supply chain planner.
It ain't easy. And it's not for the faint of heart. I wrote that down, DC. Inventory alone is not a strategy. Tandria, I like that. It's quite a quote, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Check out a couple comments here, DC and Tandria. I like, we can have a whole conversation around this one, I think. Not that one. Nothing wrong with selling out of an item. It kind of inspires demand. Jeremy, we got to talk. That's an interesting perspective. I bet you have some folks that might disagree with you. Kelvin, great to see you from Zambia via LinkedIn. Let us know what you think here today. And I think this is Andrew, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Amanda and Tricia. Andrew says, I hadn't had ice cream for a year. It's called the Sea Diet. No ice cream, no cheese, no direct cheese, no chocolate, no cider. It is the Sea Diet. Yes, that is Andrew. And let's know what the results, Andrew, if it's worth all of the, because the struggle is real. If it's worth all that. I love all those things. Tricia also dropped.
I was thinking the same thing.
Tricia dropped the Prologis story, and she also dropped her earlier article as well. So y'all check that out. So DC and Tandria, I burned my finger on some very hot chicken broth a day or two ago.
That was really hot chicken broth.
Oh, it was flaming, as I learned. I was getting it for the dogs and I failed miserably. It burned right on the tip. And of course, you use the same finger you use for your phone, your mouse, typing. And I feel like I've got like 9 fingers right now. So I'm just going to try to keep up with these comments. And I hope I didn't just violate any HIPAA laws. All right. So let's move from warehousing. And I want to talk about this story here from Supply Chain Dive. I thought this was a good one. And it'll probably spur some great conversation here. They really focus on some potential supply chain shortages and rising costs that they're tracking on their radar. So for starters, they predict that you're going to hear this. What's old is new again. They predict that here in 2026, companies will seek to strengthen relationships with their supply chain ecosystem, but particularly with those suppliers that are willing to tangibly invest in, quote, collaboration, innovation, and joint problem solving, end quote. All that typically helps optimize reliability and resilience, reduce risk, and, you know, ideally get out ahead of some of the curveballs that are coming around the corner. But nevertheless, Supply Chain Dive has its eye on copper, critical minerals, medical supplies are going to cost more. Projections from Vizient when it comes to medical supplies says inflation on medical and surgical supplies will reach 2.58% in 2026, increase 2.58%. And drug prices are going to rise another 3.35%. Man, there will be an even tighter market for memory chips, with automotive manufacturers getting squeezed a bit. As I saw it quoted in here, the highest bidder is where the chips will be going. And we can't even catch a break, folks, Tangerine DC, on our weekend steak. Coming on the heels of a 75-year low in cattle herds last year, cattle shortages are likely to be persistent as ranchers battle a variety of concerns, from droughts to economics to screw worms, which is something new I learned here today in the article. So DC, there's a lot there, right? What are you seeing out there?
So there are two things that really stand out to me here. The first, or three, I guess, procurement teams are up for challenges, the headline said.
That's right.
Because procurement teams normally don't have challenges. I feel like procurement teams are always in challenges. Like it's the nature of procurement. I work with a lot of sourcing and procurement managers, and I do not envy them. But that stood out to me. The other one is the pay-to-play dynamic. And it reminds me of when we had the Panama Canal blockage, and whoever could pay got their ships through. So, you know, we really get back around to cash, and cash flow is king when you're working in these scarce environments. It's kind of going to less of a disruption whack-a-mole story,
right,
and more of like scarcity really driven by structural constraints, trade policy, and then the competition driven by AI materials and capacity needed for that. So we'll see how that unfolds in 2026. But kind of, it also made me think about what Tandria said earlier about how just supply chain is really how the world goes round. I mean, we're talking everything from medical, agriculture and food, you know, automotive, like supply chain really does. It's the lifeblood of everything we do. And yeah, this is just another example of that. I know that also with the copper, the U.S. has been looking at the Lobito Corridor as investment. And the gentleman from Zambia, I saw he was here. A lot of that has to do with Zambia.
Yep.
But one of the biggest things is that these are really long-term strategies.
Yes.
Because where you source the minerals from as a secondary source, you know, really trying to find somewhere different, similar to what I say it with construction increasing capacity. You don't just go and say, oh, there's a mineral in this country. We're get it from there. You have to have the mine. You have to have the refinery. You have to have the infrastructure and the energy to be able to do the processing and to move it in the port. It's not something that you just say, we're going to go get it from this other place.
Right. We're not pirates.
It's just going to happen tomorrow.
Well, you know, maybe, and gosh, I'm getting a master class from y'all two here today. Maybe they'll take all the pennies and smelt those suckers down, and we'll have a little higher copper supply. I'm only kidding. I'm not sure if pennies are made of copper or not still. Tandria, all right, so DC shared a lot of her take on this great read from Supply Chain Dive about shortages and rising costs. Your thoughts?
I think this goes also to making sure that whatever the organization is, the corporation is, that they really do have a long-term strategy that involves all of their different functions. Yeah. If you're going to run into a situation where a primary product that you have is going to become either extremely difficult or extremely expensive to produce, it may be time to think of alternate products, alternate revenue streams, not just alternate supplies. So because, as DC has said on a couple of occasions, these aren't short-term decisions that are being made. Long-term strategies need to be more engaging with supply chain so that they understand what the end game is going to be in different manners than we have in the past. And now, with the rise of AI and so much going on from a supercomputing standpoint, really investing in those technologies to help with long-term decision-making could definitely help in this arena.
Yeah, no doubt. Tangerine, a lot of good stuff there. Really quick, I want to point out, Tricia drops, don't take our word for it on any of these reads. Tricia drops a link there so you can check it out. You're one click away if you've got a better finger than I do today. One click away and let us know your take. Jeremy, trust is an axiom of relationship. And trust, of course, is the foundational principle, at least one of them, of global supply chain. Good stuff there. And this is Andrew. He's down 18 pounds over a year. But he says, I'm still fat. Andrew, come on. You got to be more practically optimistic and confident. 18 pounds is terrific.
Progress over perfection, always.
Right. That's right. And yes, it was the C diet. Andrew is the one that shared. And there was one other comment I wanted to hit, but I lost it there. I'll come back and revisit. All right. One thing that was missing in that article was energy, specifically electricity. Because tell you what, we've got in the States and really around the world, we've got our work cut out for us. And it's not just data centers, but data centers is a big part of it. But we've got our work cut out for us to meet the demand, especially for electricity. And I think rising costs and who's going to pay for the infrastructure investments that we need, we're going to see. Okay, I want to share one note from our friends at EasyPost. Folks, Manifest, as we've said, is just almost here. EasyPost is going to be on the ground having all sorts of real conversations. They're really good at keeping it real, especially about AI. We invite you to join Lori Boyer and Tom Butt's session. We'll dive into how LLMs are changing the shipping game. Then you can swing by booth 777. How about that for a booth number in Vegas? Go by booth 777 to say hello and see what's new at EasyPost. I hear they're going to be giving away some really cool prizes. And when you stop by, say hello to Lori, Tom, and Kevin and the gang. Maybe, who knows, maybe they'll have some ice cream. We shall see. Booth 77.
There was an ice cream booth at Manifest last year.
Really? I knew that. I knew there was a rosé for
all day also. Manifest, so what I really love about Manifest is that it's a big family reunion where you really get to see so many people that you connect with on LinkedIn or virtually or that you haven't seen in a long time.
Yes.
I did enjoy my time last year. I just can't make it out from Atlanta this year.
DC, that's a great segue because you've been very busy, very busy. And Tandra, we got to get you out to Vegas. When was the last time you went to Vegas, Tandra Bellamy?
2 years ago.
Oh, yeah? Actually, we need to do a study on the vacancy rates in the market out in Vegas. It's been interesting to see what's transpired over the last couple of years, but we'll save that for another show. All right, so Tandra and DC. DC, you have been busy, which is one reason why you may not be in Vegas this year. Be back next year, I bet. And congrats, as I mentioned, on this new book that I've got to get signed next time we meet in person. And I got to ask you, you don't see my dog-eared notes and my scribbles in here. I'll show you when we hook back up. But what's been some of your favorite feedback related to your book, which came out last year? Is that right, DC?
Yes, about 6 months ago.
Okay, so what have you heard?
Last year. Well, my favorite feedback came from my dad, who, you expect to be my biggest fan, of course, but he is not in supply chain. So it was very interesting to get his perspective. And he caught me when he finished it. I remember I was over near the Five Guys in East Cobb on Roswell. And he said, I just have to say, and I'm saying this like not as your father, but just as a person, this is so good. It just makes so much sense. And, it's something that you can understand its impact in business, not necessarily just supply chain. Mm. And I remember thinking, okay, if he gets it, anyone can get it. It's not a knock to my dad.
Right.
It's just not his world. you know, right. It's not his world. And I have a client, when I was telling her about it, she said, oh, so it's a technical read. And I said, well, no, it's not a technical read. Like, it's important for everyone. And she said, but if someone who wasn't in your field started to read it, would they understand? I said, well, yeah, I don't know. You know, maybe not. So it was good to get that perspective from him.
Right.
Of really, number one, understanding it, not having the supply chain or manufacturing or construction, you know, background, because the title, you know, is related to the construction industry, but it's really evergreen supply chain concept. And it's really my way of telling construction leaders, especially as we start to see more offsite and prefab construction, that there are so many fundamentals from manufacturing supply chains, from pharmaceutical supply chains, retail supply chains that can be applied to construction. And we really have to stop just accepting that things are going to be delayed and accepting that things are going to go over budget, because there are ways to plan properly and execute properly. So that's what I really like to, you know, that feedback from my dad.
I love it. What's your dad's name?
His name is James Manns.
James Manns. Thanks so much, James. We'll have James on maybe sometime and learn more what he does in industry, folks.
He can't talk to you much about it.
No. Okay. That's fascinating.
Yes.
That makes demand.
He's an engineer by education and by trade.
Folks, check out. Trisha's dropped a link to acquire your own copy via Amazon. I'm sure it's available in other places. Tandria, your thoughts. DC shared a lot there, and I loved the feedback from Mr. Manns. Fathers can be our number one advocates. I don't know, between fathers and mothers, I'm not sure who's a bigger advocate for us. But Tandria, your thoughts there on what we just heard from DC?
I am just looking forward to getting a book. Yes. So great advertisement. And so let's support.
Well, you know, chapter 13 on data governance, DC. I'm kind of getting above my pay grade with that chapter, but I'll come to you in case I need mentoring. We'll figure it all out. Really quick, before we move on to a couple more. I'm going to touch on one more thing, DC, before we talk AI and before we talk reverse logistics, is your LinkedIn Learning. You've been doing a ton of LinkedIn Learning, I think. What's next in that horizon, DC?
On the LinkedIn front, LinkedIn Learning course front, I'm not sure. We did the first initial course for the Supply Chain Foundations for S&OP, and that's gotten a lot of really good feedback as well from both supply chainers and non-supply chainers alike. I mean, and they always tell people, if you are not in supply chain, this is the perfect course for you. If you're in supply chain, send it to your marketing friends, your finance friends, your engineering friends, your logistics friends, anyone who may or may not know what S&OP, IBP, and S&OE actually is, because that's what it's really for, to communicate the impact that really strong collaborative processes have on the business. And it's traditionally been a process that's owned by the supply chain, but it's a process that we need all functions to be engaged in for it to actually work. I mean, it kind of goes back to Tandria's point earlier about getting, you know, everyone involved in collaboration, and really bringing supply chain in as early as the idea of product design. You know, what are you thinking about making? What materials are you thinking about using? And having supply chain advise and provide and start to think about the strategies that are going to be required to source and develop the network and things like that. So that's the point of the course. And I've really been trying to leverage the book and the LinkedIn Learning course to design more workshops for executive leadership teams and senior leadership teams to help them understand the impact of their decisions or lack thereof, their vision, communication or lack thereof, their guidance or lack thereof.
Right.
I did two S&OP workshops last year, and they're not recorded. They're in person, you know, small group, and people clearly felt very comfortable to say how you really feel. And you know, what came out of that, a lot of it was, our leaders are the problem.
Yes.
You know, we get directives, not guidance. So it's like, oh yeah, go figure out AI. Go figure out S&OP with no resourcing, with no real change to operating models, with no real change to budgets for workforce planning or reskilling and upskilling. It just doesn't work if you don't have the right executive sponsorship. So I'm looking to use all of these insights to really create a space for those executive leaders to be able to say, this is a safe space. But with that said, get it together, guys.
That's right. Like, man.
Get it together, guys. Come on.
Well, so Tanger, really quick, on the front end of DC's comments there, she talked about bringing supply chain in early, right?
Absolutely.
And how that can be a big time differentiator. And it can also help avoid, actually improve and find opportunities, but also avoid headaches. But what else did you hear there from DC, Tandria?
Again, the importance of communication. Not only avoid headaches, avoid cost overruns, avoid product shortages. There are a host of issues that can be avoided by engaging the right people at the right time in the process.
Good stuff, Tandria. Let's see here. Jeremy's on a roll. He, I'm going to pick one thing out. Requirements analysis. I'm not bad at it. He mentioned earlier how supply chain management is our thing. And he is, maybe y'all know these acronyms. They didn't strike me earlier. BPR and OCM. BPR and OCM. So Jeremy, we're going to have you on and you can tell us all about it. All right. Let's talk AI for a minute. Now, DC, I enjoy your regular takes on AI and some of the funny things you see out in the industry on social, especially on LinkedIn. And there's an interesting story here that I thought would give us an opportunity to share some perspective. And it focuses on the topic that was news everywhere in the last week or two, Davos. I hope to make it one day to the highfalutin Davos conferences. From our friends at the World Economic Forum comes this interesting read on how hard it is to scale AI and what leaders can do about it. Now, this is a deep read. We're going to just hit high level here today. But folks, go check it out. Trish has already dropped the link. It's been estimated by Gartner that $1.5 trillion was invested in AI alone last year in 2025. Wow. But it's safe to say all those ducats didn't deliver the expected ROI. In fact, McKinsey has a global survey of about 2,000 companies. And one of the big results there, it found that about two-thirds of those 2,000 companies have not scaled their AI projects across the enterprise, which shouldn't surprise probably any of us here. Some of the companies at Davos have successfully scaled their AI initiatives, and they pointed to some of the key requirements: new strategies, capabilities, and organizational designs. Get this, Meta's chief global affairs officer, Joel Kaplan. I need a chief global affairs officer. That's got to be a cool role. Joel Kaplan spoke about how critical it is for leaders to think deeply about how AI will change company workflows, as well as the sheer nature of work, that thinking and strategizing and preparing cannot be delayed. While the work will be reimagined and redesigned, get this, Accenture's chair and CEO Julie Sweet said that we've got to keep a human touch. She said, quote, human in the lead, not human in the loop. And folks, there's also some great examples, I thought, of how companies are leveraging AI in a wide variety of ways. So check it out. So DC, can't have a conversation about talking about AI. And I wasn't there in the room at Davos, so I had to draw a lot of conclusions from this article here. But your thoughts on not just getting return on AI, but then scaling it across enterprise?
For me, it's same issue, different day. And actually, I might venture as much to say, If we had the ability to quickly pull up the first time I was on supply chain now, like 6 years ago,
right.
I think we were saying the exact same thing about like control towers or like, you know, technology in general. And, you know, we always go for the silver bullet. This is going to be the thing that changes. And you have to fundamentally look like change management is not just training of like where to click, how to use it, et cetera. I know plenty of people, if you look and say, you know, AI adoption, sure, we're using Copilot. You know, other companies are using ChatGPT. You're asking for some quick answers here and there. You have AI transcribing meetings now and, you know, following up meeting facilitator. Let me know if you have questions. But what they talked about at Davos and what this article talks about is that the fundamental need to change the operating model of how you do business, how decisions are made. You have AI, you have this technology, you have this data, but how do you get out of pilot mode and you know, in one team or one department and really scale that across the business? And that doesn't happen just from doing implementation and, you know, flipping the switch at go live.
Right.
You really have to look at, and I think OCM, if Jeremy is referring to what I know, organizational change management, you know, what does the organizational structure look like? How does it change now that someone who was previously doing this piece of technology that's doing that part, what do they now have time to do? So what's changing? What is going to, what are we going to stop doing because we don't have to do that anymore? And we're not looking at that perspective when we're implementing like as AI or any other technology. It's interesting to see, you know, I've read about, I've not to give away my age, but when email came out, when Excel came out, like how it really changed the way that business was done. I read about it, didn't experience it, but now AI is like that next big thing that everyone is, you know, really investing in.
Yep.
And I it's no surprise that it hasn't picked up. I do think that it will pick up.
Yes.
It just takes time. Humans are creatures of habit. Change is hard. It's good to see that there is this investment and this willingness from leadership to say, yes, we want to try to figure out how to make this work. And now it's just going to take some time to figure out how to make it work.
It doesn't
happen overnight.
It's a leadership issue, a big chunk of it, in my perspective, but good stuff there, DC. Tandria, your thoughts?
I think it will pick up over time. It's like digitalization. When we first started talking about digitizing things, it's like, what are we even speaking of? What difference does it make? How does that help business? I'm old. I've been around a while. When I started with UPS, everything was on paper. The drivers, when they went out to deliver packages, had clipboards and carbon paper. When we were talking about digitizing everything, had no idea what the end game was going to be, didn't know what the possibilities were going to be, but did know we had to move forward with it. And it was a true learn as you go.
Yeah.
Looking back, you know, we would have been eons behind had we not taken the first steps, even if the first steps had some uncertainty surrounding them. So with AI, I think it's going to be the same thing. I think there's cases where people just don't really know what the possibilities are. So that overarching strategy of what the end game is going to be so you can build towards it really hasn't been laid out because they don't really know what the end game is going to be. So it will be a learn as you go. And the different discoveries are really opening the eyes to what the different possibilities can be. So it's going to be interesting to watch as it just continues to unfold. The education system needs to figure out how to get on board. Because instead of just penalizing kids and failing them when they're using AI, figure out ways to incorporate AI to get them to think more critically as opposed to using it to avoid work. So we need to kind of back up and go back to the foundation. So as AI grows, we grow with it.
It's not just about cutting corners. It is about changing business, changing, I hate to be sound dramatic, but changing humanity, right? Addressing challenges that we haven't been able to successfully address. We're going to have this conversation on the next episode because we're running right out of time. And I hate to do it because I appreciated both of y'all's perspectives, not just on AI, but all the topics here today. Before we make sure folks know how to connect with DC and Tandria, I got to make one more quick plug. Folks, if you haven't checked out the Resource Hub over at thenewsupplychainnow.com, do it. It's got some really good stuff, including this new piece that Deborah Dole put together as she ventured up to NRF Rev, which is probably the largest gathering of reverse logistics leaders and returns management leaders. And she explored this massive challenge, talking about education, Tandria, the large education gap that's in place when it comes to reverse logistics, or as Tony Shiroda has called it for decades, the dark side, right? And as I did a quick Google this morning, I found two schools that offered a bachelor's degree in reverse logistics, just two. We need a whole bunch more, right? But folks, check out a lot of perspective from folks in the industry, which you will find over at the Resource Hub at supplychainnow.com. Okay, and Tricia, thank you. I'll tell you, she's dropped about 27 links. You're on it on this Monday morning. Thank you so much, Tricia and Amanda. And yes, Jeremy, education can break that inertia. Well said. All right. So DC, great to have you here. It can't be another 6 years before you come back. So we'll make a mental note to change that. But if folks want to reach out to you on anything you shared here today, right? What's the easiest way to make that happen, DC?
LinkedIn, for sure. LinkedIn is the easiest way. And then also on my website, dcimanns.com, DYCIMANNS.com. There's actually a calendar link, especially related to any conversations around potential training needs, workshop design, and certifications. Also, we're an authorized knowledge partner for ISCEA. So okay. We do certified supply chain analyst certification exam prep, which is really just your, you know, baby's first introduction to supply chain. It's really great for students. It's really great for career changers. It's really great for, again, those people who don't realize they're in supply chain. If you're right. In business and you're in supply chain. So, you know, for marketing resources, finance, consumer insights, commercial, it's a really good, not a lot of time required introductory course to understand supply chain and understand their role in supply chain.
Oh, everybody needs to go through that. Everybody needs to go through that course. love that, DC. Appreciate the great work you're doing. Continue to do out in the industry. And I look forward to this follow-up. Every great book will have what do I know? I don't know anything about writing books, but I bet there's another book coming based on the success of this one. Tandre Bellamy, great to have you back. You continue to move up the charts and the appearance charts here at Supply Chain Now. Love that. I bet you're top five. Tandre, how can folks connect with you on anything you've shared here today?
Just like DC, LinkedIn is the easiest, quickest, most efficient way to get a hold of me.
It is just that easy. And we've dropped DC's and Tandre's link right there. So you're one click away. We try to make things very easy. And some folks are saying they've already connected or followed. Wonderful. All right. So I hate to leave it here. There's so much more we could get into. But as DC mentioned earlier, hey, we got a lot of work to do. So I want to first thank everybody. DC Sfregola, founder and CEO of New Gen Architects. DC, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Look forward to having you back soon. Tandre Bellamy, my esteemed co-host. You make all these conversations a lot smarter. We just need to go all meetings together, Tandre. Can we figure a way to make that happen?
Sure, Scott. I'm at your beck and call. Just let me know.
Man, it'd be a lot smarter conversations if we could make that happen. Anyway, Tandre, always a pleasure to connect with you and co-host with you. Big thanks to our friends at EasyPost, powering the buzz all month long in February. Again, they're making shipping easier, and more flexible, and more scalable. Learn more at EasyPost.com. Big thanks to Amanda and Tricia behind the scenes. And most importantly, big thanks to our global audience for being here with us today. All right, so folks, you know your homework. DC and Tandre brought a lot to the table here today, a lot of actionable perspective. It's the best kind. It's the only kind. Take one thing you heard here from DC or Tandre, put it into practice. Deeds, not words. Do something with it, folks. And with that said, on behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now team, Scott Luton, challenging you, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And we'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.